Welcome to the Monument Member Podcast, your weekly update for Academic Speech and Debate, Season 18, Episode 7. Welcome to the Monument Member Podcast, everyone. My name is Chris Jube, the senior editor to the Monument Member releases. Members enjoy speech and debate source material delivered loyally every week, written by champion competitors as well as their coaches, to make sure you, as a loyal member, receive the best coaching available in NSDA, NCFCA, and the STOA leagues. Now, this week, we're going to hear from Vance Terfethen. He's going to be talking about the STOA resolution this week, the STOA policy resolution. He's a fun to listen to because he's one of the best coaches in the country, and we're very happy to have him as part of the Monument publishing gig that we do, as well as Training Minds Ministry, because he did that at the camp last month. He did the presentation. We're going to hear from him. But before we do, let's go into this week's content that is released. We have, as you may know, if you're in the NSDA, you know that the two resolutions were released last week, a Lincoln-Douglas debate on national service and public forum on South Korea. That's hot in the news, even if the NSDA didn't announce that. The scuttlebutt between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump are heating up, and it makes the resolution in the NSDA even more important about South Korea's self-defense. We also have a bonus apologetics download for the STOA updates. We had that last week, but I reran it again this week just to give you we go through and actually tell you not only what STOA tells you, which is the new questions that they have, but also the questions that they deleted. It's nice to have a comparison. If you did apologetics last year and you're doing it again this year, it'd be nice to kind of compare the two and be able to tighten up your work there. We are planning on coming out with releases that will be addressing the new questions, the apologetics questions for STOA, so you can look forward to that. We actually have only two more weeks of our summer releases. That means these first eight releases, we're in week number seven, the first eight releases do get released along with the Blue Book and Red Book. So if you're a new debater, a brand new one, I suggest you get either Blue, Red, or Green Book, because those come with the summer downloads as well as the educational material, the real curriculum to teach you how to do those debate formats. So you can find out more about that at monumentpublishing.com. We have a little bit more about that in our sponsors sums up. So that sums up what the Monument Member updates have for the week. And now let's hear from our sponsor, which is Monument Publishing. You likely know of Speech and Debate's renowned curriculum and textbooks from Monument Publishing. Since 1998, we've been the leading developer of curriculum that has helped train thousands of speakers and debaters in NCFCA, STOA, and now NSDA leagues. They have a special deal going on right now to the end of the summer. When you order at least $50 worth of books, flow sheets, timepieces, or any other learning material, you will be automatically upgraded to priority mail shipping. This is a $14.95 value for free. Get prepared for competition. Your first tournament will be here before you know it. Go to monumentpublishing.com and order by August 31st for your free shipping. Okay, so let's hear from Vance Terfethen. He gave a 2.5-hour presentation to the Training Minds Camp attendees in July, thoroughly analyzing the Season 18 STOA resolution on transportation policy. Now, today's podcast covers a portion of this presentation, giving STOA competitors a great kickoff analysis of the exciting topic of U.S. transportation policy. The resolution for STOA is resolved. The United States federal government should substantially reform its transportation policy. Now, the fuller presentation will be available in September exclusively to Monument members at monumentmembers.com. For now, members can access two informational articles. We are in week seven. Two of the three releases, two of the eight summer releases are information articles, and then the others are affirmative and negative sides to the resolution. So for access to this year's releases, go to monumentmembers.com/content/policy. Okay, well, here's Vance Terfethen on STOA's transportation topic.
And this is the lecture on the STOA debate resolution for 2017 to 2018 federal transportation policies. In the first part of this lecture, we're going to be talking about the history and background of federal transportation policies so that you have an understanding of where our current policies came from. And in the process of that, you're going to start getting ideas for cases. Then in the second half of this lecture, we're going to actually start delving into current issues in federal transportation policies so that we actually will actually hand you ideas for cases. And you'll see where some of the ideas for the cases that you already have, where they've come from. So let's start by talking about federal transportation policies. But in order to do that, we're going to kind of go backwards in time to the history of U.S. transportation policies. You kind of have a guy on a horse there. I guess that's George Washington or somebody. But that illustrates kind of where we came from in terms of the primitive transportation that we had in this country, back going back to even before we were a country, when we were colonies of England. In the 1700s, there were really only, as far as I can tell, three forms of transportation. And that is boats, animals, and walking. And if you didn't have one of those, you weren't being transported. I can't imagine how you could be transported in, say, 1700 without one of those. Maybe somebody can think of one. Help me out. I don't think hot air balloons were invented until the 1800s. So without technology, you're kind of limited in what you can do as far as transportation. And in fact, in the 1700s, transportation was one of the biggest barriers to the development of what would become the United States, or I'll use that term even anachronistically because we weren't the United States then, but I'll use that term, to these colonies or these states being developed. Because when you think about the first settlers who arrived in North America, they arrived, of course, by boat from Europe. The American Indians are already there. I don't know how they arrived, but they're already there. But the European settlers who built this country into what it is today, they arrived by boat, and it's easy to get here by boat and move around by boat. But then once you get there and your boat lands, then what do? Because you have this continent that's all full of forests and swamps and mountains and everything else. How do you then move around? And it's not easy. And so one of the big challenges that the early settlers faced was the fact that there was no infrastructure. And let me get a candy out. Where's my thing of candy here? All right. Mr. Parks will throw you candy if you give me a good answer. What do we mean when we talk about infrastructure? What does that word mean? You're going to hear that a lot. What does it mean? Yes?
Paved roads, easy to drive on or walk on.
Okay, well, that's an example of infrastructure. What does the word itself mean? Somebody over there. Yes?
I say that it's anything that's open for public use that has to do with, like, the mechanics between two states, two counties, or environmental protection. So anything that's publicly used,
well, I think
specifically protect people from the elements or for the better use of interaction.
Okay, I think you're on the right track. We'll throw you a candy for that. That's a good start. Mr. Parks, how would you define infrastructure if you had to define it?
I would define it, I'm not turning on here, but I would say it's anything that interconnects two structures to allow any kind of commerce or any kind of interaction between the two things. In other words, infrastructure could be anything from a communications device to a transportation device to electrical grid, something that allows the connection of one entity to another.
Okay. If you break down the word into its components, infra means below, and structure means some kind of building or physical thing that has been built. So it's what goes below. It's the things that go below the rest of the economy, the rest of society. So you have to have these things in place first before you can build on top of them. They're the structure that goes below, and then you build on top of it. So, for example, that's why a road is infrastructure, because the road is below, and then you build up from there. You drive on top of it. You put houses and streets. You put houses and businesses next to the road. So the road is there, then you build on top of it. Now, the same with railroad tracks. Railroad tracks are infrastructure. You put them down, then you put trains on top of them, and you have all this business and commerce that goes on top of it. But the infrastructure is what goes below. All right? So there's a quote from James Madison talking about, and of course, Madison is one of the founders, and he talks about the importance of this infrastructure. He doesn't use the word, but that's what he's talking about. And he says, nothing which tends to facilitate the intercourse between the states can be deemed unworthy of the public care. That's a big fancy way of saying the government ought to do a lot to speed up trade among the states. And in context, that's what he's talking about, is transportation infrastructure, that we need to do more, to facilitate transportation among the states so that people can get from one state to another and really get things moving. Because, let me show you why. What if you're sitting there in, let's say, Pennsylvania, and you've got a farm, and you're growing all kinds of corn, or you're digging for coal, and suppose your farm's really producing really great crops. Your coal mine's producing all kinds of wonderful tons of coal, but you can't get it to anybody who wants to buy it. What good is it? It has no economic value until you can get it to the market. And that market is defined by who you can get it to. Suppose you can only get it to people that are near you in Pennsylvania, versus suppose you can get that coal or that wheat to somebody in South Carolina and everybody in between. All of a sudden, your market has now expanded and your economic opportunities have now multiplied. And so your prosperity is going to increase. Whereas otherwise, all you have is a heap of corn that no one's going to buy. You can eat some of it, but that's it. You have a pile of coal, heat your own house with it, but nobody else is getting it because you don't make any money out of it. So that's why transportation infrastructure, that's why President Madison says, we've really got to juice this up. We've got to do whatever we can and pay for it out of the public treasury, because if we don't, we're all just going to be sitting on our farms doing stuff and it's never going to get to the market and no one will benefit. Early transportation infrastructure in America, well, they had ports like Boston, New York City, Baltimore, the big ports that existed, Charleston, South Carolina, Savannah, Georgia. So they had ports that could take shipping coming from England or movement among the colonies. So that was good. They had Indian footpaths. And in fact, there's a town not far from where I live in Union County, North Carolina. The town is called Indian Trail. Well, guess what that used to be 300 years ago? It was a trail that the Indians followed to move among North and South Carolina. That's all it was one day, but that was their infrastructure. It was a trail that the Indians used. Rivers were initially a very important source of transportation in the 1700s, because when you have a river, all of a sudden, one of the big challenges of movement of goods and people is the physics concept of friction. When you're on a road, you have to physically deal with the friction of bouncing along a road and trying to overcome that friction. When you have water, water has buoyancy. And when you float things on water, all of a sudden all that friction and that weight is relieved and you just float along. So in many cases, it's much cheaper to transport things by water than it is by land. So if you have access to some moving water, like an ocean or a river, or something that does the function of those, we'll talk about that in an upcoming slide, when you have water, you have a much better opportunity for transportation. Also, of course, bridges, obviously. If you want to get across the river, you got to have a bridge. Or you have to go hundreds of miles out of your way to go around to the next point where you can cross. How many of you are familiar with the French children's song, Sur le Pont d'Avignon? Every French student learns that, right? How many of you French students? Nobody's getting any candy in this camp. Okay, that's too bad. All right. Well, never mind. I won't tell that story then. It's a song that every child learns that learns French songs. It's a song about singing on the Bridge d'Avignon. The Bridge d'Avignon made the town of Avignon, France, rich, because the next place to cross the river was like 100 miles away. And the minute they put that bridge up, of course, they charged a toll for crossing it, but it was much cheaper than going all the way around to the next point, coming all the way back across the Rhone. And all of a sudden, voila, you could make lots of money, and the town became rich just because they built a bridge. So transportation infrastructure can have a huge impact on economic wealth. And, of course, the people who were taking that bridge, yeah, they had to pay the toll, but they were better off because they didn't have to pay the extra expense of all the travel to go to the next nearest place. So everybody wins. Military roads. The British government built roads to protect the colonies during and because of the French and Indian War, where the American colonists were being attacked by the French and the Indians. And, of course, you have to have roads to move the military around in order to protect the people, and that costs money. And, of course, that leads to not just the roads themselves, but, of course, the cost of military protection is part of what leads to the heavy taxes that Parliament imposes on the colonists. And, of course, that is part of what leads to the American Revolution. It's expensive to pay all those soldiers and build all those roads to protect the colonists. And the colonists, why don't those colonists want to pay those taxes? We spent all that money on them. They don't want to pay for it. What's up with that? People want something for nothing from the government. Who knew? Well, anyway, this is kind of the bottom line to why the founders, or at least President Madison and some of the others, and the British, realized is you're not going to get economic development and growth if you don't have transportation infrastructure. The stuff's just going to sit there, and you won't be able to develop. They had a whole continent out there, and they knew it was there, How are they going to develop it? Got to have transportation.
Okay, we're going to cut it off there. That concludes this week's podcast. I hope you become a Monument member. If you're not already, go to monumentmembers.com. We're going to be coming out with the full 2.5 hours of the session. It covers the history and the status quo of the transportation policy for STOA debaters for those members. SDA and NCFCA, don't worry. We are coming to you later with some content for your resolutions. But for now, that we focused on STOA this week. So we'll have brand new material for you next week on the Monument Member Podcast. Keep sharpening yourself for competition. We will see you next week.